Today on Annenberg Radio News.
Trains coming 240 times a day, sometimes 55 miles per hour. We know there are going to be accidents.
The Metro Expo line is moving forward, but a community activist explains why he's trying to derail it. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Tuesday, February 24, 2009. I'm Brooke Sydney Gavins. A fatal shooting on a city bus is prompting concerns about safety in the city's transportation system. Janelle Burdett reports on last night's shooting.
Authorities are still searching for the gunman who shot and killed a teenager on a Metro bus last night. 17-year-old Edward Walker got into an argument with the shooter yesterday evening as he got off the bus at Crenshaw Boulevard and West 60th Street. Eddie Jones, president of the Los Angeles Civil Rights Association, spoke out at the site of the shooting in Hyde Park today. He called for the Metropolitan Transportation Authority to strengthen security measures on buses.
And I know that they do have cameras on some of their buses. Most of the state-of-the-art newer buses do have them. I think that it is, if they don't have them on every bus, I think that they should put them on every bus, and they should run 24 hours a day, 7 days per week.
The Los Angeles Police Department is investigating the shooting as a gang-related homicide since they believe the two men were members of rival gangs. Janelle Burdett, Annenberg Radio News.
The Los Angeles City Council voted today to extend a temporary ban on new billboards and large building graphics by 45 days. This extension will provide the city's planning commission with more time to regulate where these signs would be put up. They want to limit the number of advertisements and graphics that wrap around sides of buildings throughout Los Angeles. Five candidates are vying for LA City Attorney's office next Tuesday. Jean-Luc Renaud has more on the two front runners' most recent endorsements.
City Attorney candidates Jack Weiss and Carmen Truchanich continue to unveil endorsements a week before the election. The gun control group, the Brady Campaign, announced this morning its support of Weiss, who now serves on the city council. Yesterday, Weiss received endorsements from several environmental advocates, including Heal the Bay president Mark Gold and actor Ed Begley, Jr. He's also seen as a close ally of Mayor Villaraigosa and city councilwoman Wendy Gruhl, who is running for city controller. Weiss was not at yesterday's endorsement announcement. A Truchanich spokesman pounced on his absence and doubted Weiss's ability to show up to work if elected. Truchanich has endorsements from the LA Times, DA Steve Cooley, Councilman Dennis Dine, and former Planning Commission President Jane Ellison Usher. Michael Amirian, Noel Weiss, and David Berger are also running for city attorney.
That was ARN's Jessica Connor. An assemblyman from San Francisco thinks legalizing marijuana may be the answer to California's budget problems. Tom Aminiano proposed a bill yesterday that would tax and regulate recreational marijuana sales in California. Aminiano says the state could get more than $1.3 billion in much-needed revenue if legislation passes. Elaine St. Pierre is a spokesman for NORML, a nonprofit organization for the reform of marijuana laws. He says the bill makes perfect sense in this harsh economy, but he doesn't expect the bill to pass.
First they mock you, second they fight, third you win. So I would expect this first time out there would probably be a lot more mocking, but I think the second time it's introduced, it'll be taken much more seriously.
The new bill would make California the first state to market the drug for recreational use. The state already allows for medicinal use of the drug. Today is Spay Day, and the Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals is reminding you to help control the pet population. Richie Duchon explains why you should have your pet spayed or neutered.
Anyone who's watched The Price is Right knows Bob Barker wants you to do your part and spay your pet. Well, he's not the only one. Today, the Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals is celebrating Spay Day. They're enticing people to get their pets spayed or neutered by offering a free microchip. The Humane Society says not spaying or neutering your pet can lead to serious problems. It says it leads to more unwanted puppies and kittens in the pound who have to be put to sleep. Richie Duchon, Annenberg Radio News.
In weather, partly cloudy tonight with areas of fog, lows in the lower 50s. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, patchy fog and drizzle in the morning, highs in the mid-60s. Another partly cloudy day Thursday with areas of fog in the morning, highs Thursday in the 60s. Later on Annenberg Radio News, we get into the gritty details of the new stimulus bill and see how it will benefit the Golden State. Metro officials are still trying to get the Exposition Rail Line back on track. The California Public Utilities Commission issued a decision last week on a controversy that had stopped the project in the Crenshaw area. Karen Marcus explains.
The PUC decision focused on two of 38 stops on the LA to Culver City line to be built by 2010. The stops are at Harvard Boulevard and Farmdale Avenue in South Los Angeles. The commission rejected building a street-level crossing at Farmdale Avenue, but approved a rail line at Harvard Boulevard. Chief Operating Officer of Build Expo, Samantha Bricker, says a stop at Harvard Boulevard will be built over a pedestrian tunnel.
The Harvard crossing basically was asking for permission to lay our tracks over an existing grade-separated underground tunnel. So we weren't touching the tunnel. We weren't changing the tunnel. It is not part of the project. We were simply asking for permission to put the tracks over an existing grade-separated crossing.
Both crossings are controversial because they are near schools and residents feel it would be a danger for students. The PUC suggests building a pedestrian bridge over the tracks near Dorsey High School. The Citizens' Campaign to Fix the Exposition Rail Line wants the railway underground instead of at street level, but Bricker says that is impossible.
I don't know of any other instance in the country where an underground line has been built underneath an existing railroad right-of-way.
MTA says the goal of building the railway is to reach the west side and reduce traffic congestion on the 10 freeway. Karen Marcus, Annenberg Radio News.
Damian Goodman is a community activist who has made it his personal mission to take the Expo rail line down. Underground, that is. Goodman is the head of the Citizens' Campaign to Fix the Expo. He says they won't stop fighting until city officials agree to build the train underground and away from local schools. Goodman spoke with Annenberg Radio News about his work and what it means for South Los Angeles.
Well, I'm currently the coordinator of the Citizens' Campaign to Fix the Expo Rail Line, which is better known as the Fix Expo Campaign. And we're working on empowering the South LA community regarding the second largest mass transit, or forgive me, the second largest public works project in the county, the Expo Line, which is being built. When our concerns were being conveyed going back two decades during the environmental review process, they were ignored. They were the same as the concerns that were being voiced west of La Cienega to the Robertson Terminus in Culver City right now. It's a great saying, don't tell me your priorities, show me your budget, and I will tell you your priorities. Well, MTA is spending $185 million for the 1 mile of Phase 1 of the Expo Line between La Cienega and Robertson, while they're only spending $140 million for the 4.5 miles from Vermont to one block east of La Cienega, Clyde. So, you know, our statement is, you know, if you gave us the same amount per mile, we'd have enough money to build the Expo Line as we'd like underground and still have enough left over to paint every house down Exposition Boulevard. It's very difficult for us to accept arguments like there aren't resources when, you know, Metro basically complies to communities they feel are powerful enough to get in the way and doesn't comply with other communities. Well, Metro applies, you know, a separate standard. That needs to be addressed, a more system-wide focus on Metro's planning processes. That conversation needs to begin. Our streets. Building good rail is not as simple as just laying down tracks anywhere, anyhow. You got to do it right. So if they do this right, we think that this will be a line that's faster and more people will ride it, and that it will prove to the powers that be two things. The first, that you can't take a community for granted just because you don't think that they have adequate political representation or they're not as politically as strong as other areas. And two, that when you come together and take everyone's concerns seriously, you can actually build better projects.
President Barack Obama will give a primetime speech to the nation tonight at 6, Pacific Standard Time. Californians are wondering what the federal economic stimulus package means for them. Earlier today, I spoke with Professor Christian Redfern of USC's Policy, Planning, and Development School about the stimulus bill impact on California's low-income neighborhoods.
There's a lot of things going on in the macroeconomy and sort of country at large these days, which are going to have a pronounced effect on poor communities. So, you know, he's talking about forming an office of urban affairs, you know, sort of making urban issues a cabinet level position. And, you know, I'm not so sure where this will go, what it will do, but it sort of raises the whole. What it does is sort of reorganizes thinking around a topic as opposed to a discipline. There's lots of things that are going on in poor communities, such as schools and crime, and certainly the housing problem is part of that, but it's part of a overall pattern of overall set of issues that that needs to be thought about. And what they're going to do is, at some level, I think they're going to try to organize all this under one roof to make sure they're coordinated, and it makes a lot of sense. Okay, so that's the first thing he can do as the president, is actually raise these kind of issues that are specific to these communities, or maybe more manifest in these communities, to a higher level and actually have them be coordinated. That's a terrific start.
Are there elements in the economic stimulus package
Sure.
that could speak to these specific housing issues in those neighborhoods?
Sure. And you know, I think all of us are a little bit frustrated by the lack of detail, but I think we should cut him some slack. It's an enormously complicated problem. And the big problem I think that the federal government has in this instance is they don't have the ability to customize programs locally. I mean, they're going to come up with one set of rules that fit everybody, and that's, you know, problematic. You know, neighborhoods at the low end of the spectrum have different sorts of problems than those in the middle, working class, working poor, dysfunctional poor neighborhoods. These are all different kinds of housing problems, and so there's a limited amount he can do to actually prescribe specific solutions for specific neighborhoods. So from the get-go, what he's trying to do, I think, is provide broad support for a system of finance, which has been, you know, pretty successful for a long term. We've had this sort of significant hiccup, even euphemistically, over the last couple of years. But I mean, his biggest priority at this point is to stabilize capital markets. Okay, so, and again, that affects everybody across the spectrum, and it creates job growth and all these other things are influenced by it. But specifically with regards to housing, to the extent that banks aren't lending and mortgages are resetting and there's impossible to refinance and there's this sort of big penalty that's being paid by anybody who doesn't have very good credit scores right now, it's very hard to refinance. And this puts these communities at severe risk. And I think on that front, I think my favorite example of this is Garden Grove. A friend of mine is a city councilman. I was talking with him a couple of weeks ago, and he was really concerned that some of the significant progress that had been made in these communities over the last couple of years, you know, homeownership rates were up and people had entered the housing market for the first time and had actually seen some equity and were sort of experiencing, you know, what people call the American dream. And, you know, now that things have settled a bit and prices have fallen, with the pride of ownership, the landscaping that was going in, there's lots of things that go along with those kind of communities and that kind of investment in community. And they're sort of at risk for being undone because, you know, once one or two foreclosures occur, it sort of sends a signal about the neighborhood, then things slide backwards in three or four of them, and all of a sudden you've got a bunch of foreclosures and other sort of local maladies start sort of picking up, and the neighborhood gets back to a lower trajectory. And the councilman I was talking to was sort of generally concerned that progress had been made, and he's generally worried about losing that progress.
One of the elements that have been brought up a lot with relationship to these neighborhoods is social services, you know, like Medicaid and COBRA and unemployment. Will the economic stimulus package help low-income neighborhoods in these areas?
You know, that's again, one of these big questions about how it's promulgated, because at some point there had been a discussion about, you know, just getting money out to states and having them extend Medicare, you know, do at the state level have all these things because they know who the populations were and the right way to do it, especially unemployment benefits. But I don't know where that stands at this point. You know, that's one of those, you know, there's this money available, and how it's allocated is a big mystery right now.
Well, thank you. We've been talking to Christian Redfern, who's an associate professor in USC School of Policy, Planning, and Development, and he's also a research fellow at USC's Lust Center for Real Estate. Thank you so much, Mr. Redfern.
My pleasure.
Negro Head Mountain near Seminole Hot Springs will soon be going by a new name. Annenberg Radio News reporter Marie Cunningham reports.
Thank you, Supervisor Antonovich.
As Black History Month comes to an end, a local landmark is getting a much-needed name change to pay tribute to one of LA's most notable African-American pioneers. 3rd District Supervisor Zeb Yarzlosky sponsored a proposal at today's County Board of Supervisors meeting to rename Negrohead Mountain as Ballard Mountain in honor of John Ballard.
The action we're taking today is to nominate this, to send a request or a nomination to the U.S. Geological Survey and Board of Names to rename this feature, this peak, which is over 2,000 feet above sea level, for Ballard and his family.
Ballard was an African-American pioneer who settled in L.A. in 1859. A decade later, he became one of 6 original founders of the African Methodist Episcopal Church. AME based its theology on anti-slavery principles and the notion that people of African descent were not second-class citizens under God. Patty Coleman, a professor of history at Moore Park College, was on hand for today's meeting to support the motion.
We're bringing out one of these stories that has never been told before, and we're truly starting to see that there was a vibrant, active Black community in Los Angeles in the late 19th century.
In 1880, Ballard moved his family to the Santa Monica Mountains near Seminole Hot Springs, where he eventually purchased 160 acres of land. Soon after, the highest peak in the area was named after Ballard's nickname. Nick Noxon and Paul Kohlberg both live in the Santa Monica foothills region and approached Yarzlosky about the proposed name change in December.
Well, the mountain was named after John Ballard, and who was known almost universally as Nigger Ballard during his lifetime. And to some people, I think that was an epithet. To some people, it was just the way things were at that time. And of course, now it's almost universally disliked.
Kohlberg has lived near Negrohead Mountain for more than 30 years.
It was called Nigger Mountain. It was actually referred to in some LA Times articles as Nigger Hill. But in the 60s, Lady Bird Johnson decided to change all the nigger designations, and we understand that they had trouble deciding whether to call it Negro or colored. It was very liberal at the time, and they decided to call it Negro, and at that time it was changed on all the maps to Negrohead Mountain. And that's the way you see it now in Google Earth.
Mark Ridley Thomas, the only African American on the LA County Board of Supervisors, spoke in favor of the motion.
We acknowledge this and think it's an appropriate way to celebrate the conclusion of African American History Month in 2009.
The proposal to change the name of Negrohead Mountain to Ballard Mountain received full support of the County Board of Supervisors. It's now up to the U.S. Geological Survey to approve the new name. Marie Cunningham, Annenberg Radio News.
Now we check in with Katie Kim to find out what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision.
Thanks, Brooke. Coming up on Annenberg TV News, President Obama addresses Congress for the first time in a joint session. He has some tough questions he'll have to answer to a nation facing economic turmoil. And we have opinions from one expert who weighs in on what the president now needs to do. Plus, the latest in the stabbing trial of USC student Brian Frost. Now, that suspect will stand trial for last semester's murder and could face 25 years to life in prison. We have the full details of why prosecutors say the suspect went on the attack in the first place. And after an election full of violations, preliminary USC results will finally be announced tonight. We have reaction about what students and candidates are saying about the campaigns. All this and much more coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6.
Check out our website for all the news on National Pancake Day. That wraps it up for today. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Brooke Sydney Gavins.